Nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.
Okay, yeah, here we go. Welcome to part two of our show. Hope you enjoyed that with Dr. Richard Massey. Boy, I sure did. The whole exosome things and the origin story and the virus. Whew, man. Really, really fascinating. Dr. Ray Pete is here, and he's with us, and we're very happy to have him each month. It is the third Monday of each month, around 10:30 Central. I had a little trouble getting his picture together. Sharon's going to send another one, and I'll get it up so you can see what he looks like, because he doesn't do the camera thing. And so we just do audio with Dr. Pete, which is great. It's all that counts. He's got some good things to say. Ray Pete is a PhD and has been for a very long time. He was, let me pull up his thing here. Biology, University of Oregon. He specialized in physiology, and he taught schools including University of Oregon, Urbana College, Montana State University, National College of Naturopathic Medicine, Universidad Veracruzana, Universidad Autónoma del Estado de México, Blake College, private nutritional counseling for years. His website is raypete.com. And you can do Ray Pete newsletter, I believe, at Gmail. I'll ask him exactly. I don't know why I don't remember that. I should. Ray Pete newsletter. And you get his newsletter every couple months. And you can email in right now, Patrick, at OneRadioNetwork.com, or give him a call. Dr. Ray Pete, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
How are things up there your way? You're on the way upper left coast, eh?
Yeah. I don't notice anything very different, but I guess people are still acting pretty weird, not going to their usual work and wearing masks and such.
Yeah, yeah. We were talking about these exosomes with our last guest, and I guess it was Dr. Andrew, what was his name, that fell up in New York, that brought out the whole idea of exosomes. And so here's my understanding, let me know if I'm close, and that these exosomes, they're everywhere, and we breathe them out and breathe them in every day, and this is a way that we kind of share, I guess, our common humanity with people, and that these exosomes began to be named into a virus some time ago. And virus has a whole connotation of being bad. Is that close so far?
That's close to what I believe. It's not at all accepted by contemporary biologists, but in the 1950s, a friend of mine was giving all of the background supporting that idea that organisms of all sorts are emitting particles like that. They weren't called exosomes at that time, but this person, Carl Lindegren, gathered up evidence that biologists had accumulated that really couldn't be explained any other way except for shared DNA. And there's a lab in Germany now that for several years has been showing that human cells actually incorporate a certain portion of the DNA from the foods that we eat. The particles, you know, the phenomenon of persorption, in which fairly big particles, as big as a blood cell, for example, can pass from the intestine directly into the bloodstream. And exosomes are many times smaller than a cell, so easily things that we eat, if they contain exosomes, are very likely to get into our bloodstream. And once there, according to this German lab, the cell can take them up and incorporate them, possibly at some point use them, integrate them into the functioning DNA. But a very, very large part of our genome, so-called, of the DNA inside the cell, our functioning genome is only a small percentage of the total DNA. And the theory that we're absorbing DNA all the time would account for why there's all this non-functioning DNA present.
So it's possible that our species is actually, is it possible that we're actually upgrading everyone's DNA by breathing, and that's how we're, I don't know, communicating with each other and helping each other?
But across species too.
Everybody. So animals too.
Yeah.
Wow, man. So is that what you believe, Dr. Pete?
Yes. I read that book.
It's pretty cool.
Over 50 years ago, and it was very well documented, but nothing easy to prove, but very plausible.
So is it possible that flu viruses and cold viruses and any kind of a virus are really exosomes that we all have and that we share and we run around and share with each other, and these flus and colds are internal combustions, and it's not something we actually get from some source that's not already a part of us?
I think sometimes the Luc Montagnier, the Nobel Prize guy from the HIV virus dispute with the United States, he believes that organisms communicate basically by something like radio waves that resonate. I've spent a lot of time studying the idea of resonance between organisms. Montagnier believes it's electromagnetic waves that the DNA is tuned into. I've spent most of my time thinking about the crystalline or liquid crystalline structure of the cell. The idea of liquid crystals was developed in the 30s and 40s with evidence that there's long-range order within the cell. It isn't just ordinary water, but it's a liquid crystal-like water. The way you can operate, for example, a liquid crystal display screen, that's done by the electrical control of the order in the crystal. But on a more delicate level, the order in this water-based crystal can resonate. It's easy to demonstrate that it resonates to sound waves, but the sound waves are not at all distinct from electronic fluctuations. And when you have an electrically active polarized molecule organized over the whole length of a cell, then you have the perfect conditions to resonate electronically, not just by sound waves. And that sort of resonance, there's a man in the U.S. who has a website called Cell Intelligence, who has been demonstrating the intelligent behavior within a cell, and not only of the whole cell, but the highly organized structures of the DNA. And he argues that this liquid crystalline ordering system in the cytoplasm extends right into the DNA and represents the way that the needs of the cell can draw out exactly the part of the genome that is needed at that moment for those conditions.
Wow.
That's one of the mysteries. How does the
how does it change, right?
Yeah, when there's a change in the environment, the cell senses that and reaches in and draws out just the kind of DNA needed to change to meet those problems.
Wow. And then it's possible then, as we do it and as your body does it, and then you breathe it out, and then you help other people to learn how to do it, I guess, right?
Yeah. And normally that's probably going on in a constructive way.
All the time.
But sometimes, for example, energy deficiency. If you're badly nourished,
yes,
your cell can't get the energy it needs either to maintain this very extensive organized crystal structure, or to drive the selective process to pull out the DNA and make it properly.
Yes, without the basic building blocks that we talk about.
Yeah, then those beneficial communicative processes can go wrong. And instead of catching something useful, you catch a cold.
Oh, you mean so we could pick up some exosomes that are flying around
and not be able to use them properly? Our system gets gummed up.
Oh, I see. So that's why people say I caught a cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was their own internal combustion thing that created it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But. The whole environment of the person governs or interacts with their energy state. So if you're working in a stressful environment, that stress increases your risk of something going wrong.
Sure. So then there's a, I guess what we're saying, what you're saying too, then the cells and these exosomes and this exchange from organism to organism, animal, plant, I guess, and human, is happening on all levels, and other than physical, right? And also physical, with the vibrations and the light, right, Doc? Is that what you, yeah.
Yep.
Whoa. That's pretty cool. So are we back to the basics then? I mean, with everything that we know about everything and the way the world works, can we get so really simple if we just eat really good food, get some sunlight, get some water, get some exercise? We might be good. I mean, you know, we might be good to go.
There are so many factors working against all of those basic things.
Yes.
Good quality food, good quality air and water.
Yeah, what does that mean, really, right?
And then beside that, you have the direct stresses, like when you immobilize an animal, keeping it confined, the more confined it is, the more it goes into the depressed, helpless condition.
Yes.
And people have been confined so long by a restrictive, highly demanding economic environment that people are getting into the stress, helpless condition. And Animal studies show that you can bring the animal out of that helpless state, which greatly increases the likelihood of the animal giving up during a problem instead of exerting the energy that they do have. A psychological giving up and failing to use the right resources that are there. So that accounts for things like the faith healers, just by giving them a conviction that there's a possibility of recovery.
It could happen.
Just pop right into the healthy state because they have been in this helpless, emotional, biological state. And with rats, something as simple as giving them toys to play with and a bigger area to socialize with other rats, and even tickling a rat will increase its pleasure signals and help it get out of the depressed, helpless state.
Wow. So that could be an argument as well for, say, what do they call them? Confined animal, CAFOs. So where animals or cows could not be as healthy or as vibrant or as nutritious when they're confining them unnaturally.
Everyone needs a certain amount of play and lots of freedom.
Yeah. So that would be for dogs and cats. I guess cats get over it. They just do okay living at home in the house. Yeah, I guess they adapt to it.
Even old cats like to play.
Sure, sure. So play is really important. Ray Pete is with us. Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. Wow. So are you... how do you feel about then using things like things that are made in the lab, like a sodium ascorbate or different magnesiums other than food, to balance out nutritional deficiencies overall, Dr. Pete? Do you think that's is a reasonable thing to do?
I had my own long-term experience with vitamin C. Starting in 1953, at the time, it was sold as C-vitamic or C-vitamic acid, but it was still the ascorbic acid discovered partly by Albert Szent-Györgyi. I had heard about the virtues of it. And it was sold in 50 milligram tablets. And I had, for many years, from the age of eight, first time I spent any time in the woods, I was extremely susceptible to poison oak. And working in the woods in 1953, I was almost incapacitated by extreme poison oak. And someone told me about vitamin C. I took, I think it was just one or two of these 50 milligram tablets over the weekend, and had no more poison oak reactions ever again in my life.
Wow.
Slight itch if I handle it, but those 150 milligrams over a weekend had that absolute effect. So when the big tablets came out in 1956, 500 milligram tablets, people were talking about it as preventing colds. I took one tablet. Next morning, woke up with a sore throat and a cough.
My. You did. Just one 500 milligrams of vitamin C.
But the manufacturing process had obviously changed radically because they could sell it 10 times cheaper than what it had been just 3 years earlier.
Sure, sure.
Much of the great research done with it was in the late 40s and early 50s. And then 10 years later, I was very impressed by Linus Pauling's arguments.
Mm-hmm.
So I started taking it again, was absolutely convinced, did some experiments in the lab, found that it seemed to reverse or stop some of the hardening of the collagen in animal tissues.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went on taking it, but I had a chronic cough. Went on for months, but on a trip to New York, the maid threw out my bottle of vitamin C, and so for several days, almost a week, I didn't have any, and my cough cleared up. And when I got a new bottle and started taking it, the cough came back.
Really? Whoa.
I realized that it very consistently had something powerfully allergenic, and I experimented over the next few years. I was volunteering in a clinic, and Eugene had a tremendous number of allergic people, especially because of the grass fields burning commercial grass seed producing fields,
mm-hmm.
Upwind. So I was seeing dozens of people taking everything they knew to help their allergies. And I told them my experience, suggested they stop taking all of their supplements. And almost all of them discovered they didn't have any allergies.
Really?
Except for their supplements.
What could be in these, some of these things, vitamin C and other supplements as we know them, that could be causing the allergic thing? Just extra things, extras that they put in there?
No, something was happening in the substance itself.
Okay.
A chemist, free radical chemist, published an article describing taking a chemically the purest form of synthetic ascorbic acid that was available, not from a tablet, but straight from the,
mm-hmm.
it was called reagent grade, and putting 500 milligrams in a liter of distilled water,
mm-hmm.
then putting it in an apparatus that detects free radicals. And the apparatus showed that nothing but the pure vitamin C and the pure water was producing the concentration, a steady production of free radicals that a killing dose of X-rays would have produced shining on the water.
Really? Wow.
And he said, isn't that amazing that a person can swallow this and their stomach isn't killed the way the X-ray produced radicals would kill it. He said that shows something about our tissue defenses.
So it's not the vitamin C itself. I mean, obviously, we get good stuff with oranges and fruit. It's the way that this stuff is made in the lab.
I experimented drinking a gallon of orange juice and eating guavas and other extremely high vitamin C foods. And no trace of an allergy.
Nothing.
But as little as 2 or 3 milligrams of the synthetic stuff would set off the allergies.
Interesting. So
And the chemist analyzed the traces. I think iron was the one he analyzed, but he said there are similar amounts of other catalytic heavy metals. Just takes a few atoms of the wrong heavy metal to activate vitamin C and make it toxic. When it's produced by plants, the plant couldn't maintain it. It would decompose in free radicals if they allowed even trace amounts of these heavy metals. So somehow the plants protect their vitamin C. And if you eat it from a plant source, it goes right into your own tissues beneficially rather than harmfully.
Very interesting. So we had a guest on, I guess, last week, and we're gonna talk about him a little bit. And he was suggesting that if you do synthetic vitamin C, that it does something to the iron, oxidizes it. So that could be correct, right?
The iron is reduced, the opposite of oxidation, but it takes the electron from the vitamin C, and that puts the iron in a highly reactive, toxic condition.
Right.
The iron can then give its electron directly to water, breaking down the water molecule, producing the hydroxyl radical, which is the worst indiscriminate destroyer free radical.
Wow. So I'm going to ask you about iron. Let's take a little bit break because we had quite an interesting conversation about iron, and so I'm going to get your take on. If you're on hold, you're welcome to stay there, hang in there. We got some things to do. Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. Ray Pete is with us. So get your questions in. Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. So let's see, put this guy up. I started doing shows about health and nutrition, I guess really it was in the 70s, and that's what really got me into trouble, because I guess that's when I began to get fired from radio stations, because I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I thought I was doing the right thing with telling people about stuff, but here I am in the middle of New Orleans where, I mean, the whole thing was, you know, mio mayo, crawfish and mio mayo, stuff like that, and booze. Anyway, so I've been doing this a long time with healing stuff, and you could imagine the things and tools and machines and products that people have sent me over those. Is that 40 years ago? I don't even know what it is. I guess 40 years. And lots. And I've tried a lot of stuff. Experiment with a lot of stuff. And I'll tell you, the hydrogen technology with this machine that I've been on about a year, breathing the Brown's gas and drinking the water, there's no doubt that this has been one of the most powerful things that I've done ongoing other than God, because that's the number one, that I know you and I can heal, the body can heal through divine spirit without anything. So that's my number one. But there are tools that we are given that we can use, maybe food-based vitamin C, or I don't know, things, you know, food-based things that we promote that we think are good, like pine pollens of food. But this hydrogen, there's something going on with this. It's pretty magical. You can go to molecularhydrogeninstitute.com and look at hundreds and hundreds of peer-reviewed studies on hydrogen. And Brown's gas, that the machine that we promote, AquaCure, is even a step above, because it does something fun with the water. I'm just not quite sure. There's a lifetime warranty on this machine. There's a 1 year, no questions asked, money back warranty. So if you don't like it, you can use it for 8-9 months and send it back and get back your $2,000. And what's up with that? George Wiseman makes them. George will be on the show soon. Pretty incredible stuff. Patrick Flanagan was onto the hydrogen thing. And there's many people out there selling little plop plop fizzes to get more hydrogen in your body. And that's great. Breathe the gas and drink the hydrogen water that you make at home. We have several emails, and I can see some of it myself. My some of my hair is coming back to a normal color. See on the top? I mean, I started doing the gray thing 30 years ago, and other people too. So there's something pretty special going on with hydrogen, purported to be one of the number one antioxidants on the planet. Now, there's a lot of way you can get it. Now, your body makes hydrogen. You don't need a machine. You're not going to die without it. Don't worry about it. It's not going to cure COVID. You know, we don't say any of that stuff. These are just tools that are just kind of God-given. If you got the bucks and you want to do it, play with it, I think you're going to feel better and help you. But you don't need it. Body makes hydrogen with good food. It's the way with all these things. You don't need anything extra. If you don't have any money, don't worry about it. Get out in the sun. Eat the best food you can. You'll be fine. That's just my take anyway. Whatever. So this is the hydrogen machine. You can go on oneradionetwork.com. You click an order. Click an order. Hydrogen machine. And then I use promo code OneRadio. OneRadio on oneradionetwork.com. OneRadio, oneradionetwork.com. Promo code OneRadio. Previously, we were talking with Brandon about the Blue Shield EMF device, and he says it goes out 90 yards in all directions.
It's an omnidirectional field that, if you think about a huge sphere that's expanding, that's essentially what the waveform pattern looks like.
Oh, that's cool. So it's putting frequencies into the body, and then how does that work in relation to electromagnetic field that's coming in the walls and the windows through a cell phone tower down the street?
Yeah, so the cell repeaters and Wi-Fi and all this electromagnetic radiation in the environment, people mistakenly think that this is somehow going to act like a shield and block the radiation and make it not appear on any kind of tri-field meter or any measuring device. And that's simply not the case. It's more of an energy medicine, so to speak, where it's stimulating the bodies at the cellular level to create a cellular response to make all the individual cells much stronger and more able to adapt to the EMF stressors. So that's number one on the physical or the somatic level, where the body is experiencing a decrease in stress from electromagnetic fields.
If you're interested, you can click on the Blue Shield ad on the front page of One Radio Network. Use promo code One Radio, or also contact Brandon through his website there when you click, and he'll give you more information. Front page, Blue Shield EMF protection device on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, it's an honor to have Dr. Ray Peet, PhD, RayPeet.com. And your newsletter is Ray Peet's newsletter, right? Ray Peet newsletter? Ray Peet's?
Ray Peet's with an S.
S. Newsletter.
Email at gmail.com.
Right. Ray Peet's newsletter, plural, at gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And it comes out every couple months. When's the next one coming out?
Last month is going to come out at the end of this week.
Uh-huh. And what's it about, the big
education and the what the virus situation is doing to education.
Wow. I guess a lot.
Shutting it down, basically.
Yes, sir.
Cuomo in New York met with the Gates Foundation people and Eric Schmidt, former for many years CEO and chairman of Google, working for the Pentagon, he was saying, and his commission was saying, over a year ago, the schools basically have to be shut down because they're expensive and it's much cheaper to do it over the internet.
Wow.
Just this year, he met with Cuomo, and Cuomo said, yeah, what are all these buildings and classrooms for? We don't need them if we have the internet.
Fascinating. Even in Austin, I just heard that I think they're going to do online schools for the first maybe 6 weeks and then see how it goes. But Dr. Peet, they keep testing people, more and more people, And as you know, if you get a positive test, they think you have some unique, virulent, deadly, communicable disease.
I think that that testing, the so-called incidence of disease goes up in proportion to how many tests they give. It isn't really anything to do with suffering from cold symptoms or any symptoms at all. It's just the number of tests they're doing. I think it's at this point consisting of a sales campaign for computers and the education so-called systems. Do you know who B.F. Skinner was?
A little bit about him. Yeah, a little bit.
The behavioral psychologist who argued that the concept of mind should be removed from science and education, that machines can restrict our behavior so that we give only the right behavior, no complex questions asked. The student is it could be a pigeon. You can get the pigeon to suppress all of its normal movements and give only the desired pecking a certain switch behavior. That's the principle of Skinnerian education, so-called. And exactly those principles are now forming the basis of online education. They want to make training more efficient so that you don't push any of the unwanted responses. You push only the right button and give the right answers. So it's basically a mindless training system.
Yeah, to just remember things and then repeat them on test. And I guess to your newsletter, I'm sure you talk about the idea of then parents who are all set up to go to work, right? What are they going to do? And then the kids need touch, right? And working with people and seeing other kids. I mean, that's a whole other stress level on them, isn't it?
One CEO summed it up very simply. She said, "Humans are biohazards; machines aren't."
Oh, good.
They want to take humans out of the equation, turning everything into a robot production.
Dr. Ray Pete is with us. If you're on hold, sorry, but I want to do this, and then we'll begin doing some questions. There was a fellow on that seemed like he was pretty well researched, and he was the fellow talking about iron that I mentioned and the vitamin C issue that you confirmed. And he was suggesting that early on, I don't know, 40s and 50s, somebody convinced people to start putting iron in our food, right, and iron-enriched flour and things like that. And then even increased that, I think, around 1980 or so, they wanted to do more. And that when we have too much iron in our body, then that contributes to lower copper, and then the iron can then rust and cause problems. Do you think that most of us have too much iron? Is it possible in our body?
Men steadily accumulate it through life. The exceptions are starving. In famine zones, for example, where no one gets any meat or eggs or mm-hmm. seafood, mm-hmm. Everyone eating a good normal diet, the men steadily accumulate it, and the incidence of heart attacks and heart disease, for example, correspond directly to the level of accumulated iron. So men are well ahead of women up to the age of 50 or so, because women are getting rid of some iron every month.
Menstruation, right?
Just an ounce or so of blood is enough to keep the iron down. But after menopause, women start accumulating iron like men, mm-hmm. and they actually catch up with men because slight difference in the hormones, estrogen makes you accumulate iron up to 10 times as fast as a man does.
Whoa. Where do we get so much iron? And if we're eating organic foods and not iron-enriched flour, you know, and those kind of things, we're not really getting extra iron in our food, are we?
Meat is always a very rich source of iron, so if you eat any meat every day, it's likely to be adding to your
too much
iron
too
excess,
much. Right?
Meat also has too much phosphate relative to the calcium and magnesium,
mm-hmm.
The combination of high phosphate and high iron tend in the same direction to produce stress and free radical damage.
Yeah. So it would be heavy meat eaters or have more iron? What other segment of the world? What are they eating? Anything in particular that ups the iron?
When food was being tempered with adding iron and synthetic vitamins and such.
Mm-hmm.
Even people who ate oatmeal and bread, mm-hmm. And rice, for example, were getting too much.
Too much, yeah. What's the iron's connection to heart issues, too much iron?
I think that it's almost entirely the same thing that the free radical chemists saw. That
mm-hmm.
when you're under stress, you don't need the vitamin C as a catalyst. There are many other sources of electrons. In fact, anything that interferes with oxidation is going to tend to put any iron stores that had been tucked away safely in your cells, when you don't have oxygen sucking up all the stray electrons, a stray electron will activate iron that had been harmless. So the stress creates electrons that activate the iron the same way synthetic vitamin C activates the iron.
So our stress response lowers the oxygen,
mm-hmm.
and then that causes the oxidation of the iron that was okay until we got stressed out.
The iron becomes the active ferrous form, where the ferric form can be safely stored, and the ferrous form creates the hydroxyl radical, the most toxic free radical, and then that damages DNA, creates effectively mutations, and turns on the whole inflammation process.
I see. And then what's the connection with iron and copper?
Copper is a stronger oxidant than iron is, and so when the stress creates the ferrous form of iron, copper can turn it back into ferric iron. Copper defends against activated iron by putting it back into the passive storage form.
So the copper just helps the iron not to get toxic and harmful.
Yeah.
But then doesn't iron lower the copper levels? Too much iron.
It probably does by competition, but the stress, I think it's more likely that stress is causing you to be unable to retain the copper efficiently, giving the iron a chance to butt in and knock the copper out of the place it should be. So it's both too much iron and too much stress that makes us lose copper. When you start a free radical type of stress, we put out a protein called metallothionine that has sulfur in it that sticks to heavy metals. And we put that out to defend against all of these toxic heavy metals. But in the process, it tends to carry away the good copper as well. Copper binds strongly. So if you're poisoned by mercury, you'll produce metallothionine, and it will also carry out some zinc and copper, which is not good.
Not good. So some folks think that things like beef liver, I think, nuts and mushrooms, they're high in copper, right? And advisable
right.
to have some in our diet?
Right.
And then also to maybe give blood. What do you think about giving blood a couple times a year?
Several studies have found that people are healthier who give blood occasionally.
Hmm. Occasionally. What would you think? Do you give blood yourself at all?
Nope.
I
just don't like to be around doctors and needles.
That's right. I understand. Yeah, who wants people poking you? So you don't, I kind of hear you saying, it doesn't sound like it's, you really advise it or it's necessary to blood thing, but it's not going to hurt anyone to give blood a couple times a year, certainly.
No, it's probably beneficial for most people. After you get around 50 years old or so, the things like the exosomes tend to circulate in your blood.
Mm-hmm.
After a certain age, they can start having an age-promoting effect rather than a reparative effect. And so losing some of your old exosomes is probably part of what happens when an old person donates blood.
I see. So here's an interesting email. This is great. This is from Gloria. She says, I would like to give blood. I heard Morley Robbins on Patrick's show, but I'm only 100 pounds and they won't let me give blood because I'm too skinny. They think I am. And how can I get rid of any extra lead, I mean iron, in my body?
Oh, stopping eating is the most important thing.
Oh, stop eating iron-enriched foods and...
And cut way back on meat.
Meat.
One or two eggs a day mm-hmm. will provide the essential iron that you need. And emphasizing milk and cheese, for example, are notoriously iron deficient.
Oh.
And so the extent to which you're... major calories come from cheese and milk, you're effectively subtracting iron from your body.
Oh, you're actually taking some away.
We're shedding it all the time from our intestine and skin cells.
Ayurvedic medicine, who I've kind of played around with for many years, Dr. Pete, they've often recommended taking a really nice copper kind of water thing and taking a little water that's been sitting in the copper vessel once a day or so. What do you think about that?
I think it's probably helpful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You don't want to combine copper with any reductant, vitamin C or otherwise.
Right.
In your stomach, copper or iron can oxidize fatty acids, vitamins, other essential nutrients.
Yes.
So you don't want free copper combined with food.
With food.
But in the form of pure water on an empty stomach, I think it could
okay,
be
do it. Do it on an empty stomach and leave it alone for a bit. So there are some nice food-based cherries and some pretty good things, organic with vitamin C. Do you think it's advisable or healthy to take some of those food-based vitamin C's extra every day?
I tested myself when I stopped taking any synthetic vitamin C. I found that my urine contained around 3,000 milligrams per day months after I had stopped any supplement.
Really?
And I realized that the only foods that don't contain any vitamin C are grains, seeds, and nuts. Everything else, basically, all the way from algae and potatoes.
They have vitamin C in them.
Clams, turnip greens are a great source. All living forms, basically, except humans, gorillas, and chimpanzees produce their own vitamin C. So seafood and vegetables and fruits all contain as much as we need.
I guess some of the oysters and shrimps and lobsters, they have a lot of good copper in there, right? If you want more copper, too?
Oysters are especially a very good source of copper.
Yeah. So what would be some of the symptoms, Dr. Raypete, of someone who maybe doesn't want to do this test and find out about the iron load? Could there be some symptoms that somebody might say, oh, I might have too much iron and want to do more copper? Is there any symptoms that come up right on the top for you?
Well, the most studied is heart disease symptoms, but any of the degenerative things are activated by iron, inflammation, loss of muscle mass, for example.
Please, Dr. Pete, could you repeat what you said about hydroxyl, please? I was wondering if it's a byproduct of vitamin C. You said it is very good for something. I can't help but notice it is the first part of the anti-malaria drug being touted by many doctors. Hydrochlorine, yeah.
When it's attached to a molecule like that, that's fine. It isn't a reactive free radical. But when something like ferrous iron in the cell contacts water, it creates a free hydroxyl radical. An attached hydroxyl radical is part of everything normal, like sugar is full of attached hydroxy particles. And inside the cell, about a ratio of 8 to 1 of the vitamin C isn't in the form of ascorbic acid at all. The cell turns it into dehydroascorbate. Probably 80 or 85% of the vitamin C in our bodies doesn't show up in a test. So it gives people the impression that meat and seafood plants don't contain any vitamin C when it's actually there in the form of dehydroascorbate. And dehydroascorbate works like oxygen to protect against the excess electrons. So if you take in a huge amount of any reducing material, which could be ascorbic acid or the various things that have been advertised as supplements, antioxidant supplements, those contribute potentially toxic electrons that can produce the hydroxyl radical. If they reach an excess level in your stomach and bloodstream, because where they're really doing going to do their work is inside the cell in the oxidized form. Many of the flavonoid chemicals in oranges, for example, and guavas and vegetables and fruits, the colored yellow pigmented or orange pigmented molecules, they are historically, they've been called antioxidants like vitamin C, but like dehydroascorbate, when they get in the cell, they are functioning as oxidants working with oxygen to defend you against the stress-induced free radical excess electrons.
Wow, man, holy cow, that's pretty geeky stuff. Patrick Timpone, really great stuff with Dr. Ray Peet, OneRadioNetwork.com. We're having a little bit of interruption with our stream. Don't worry about it. The podcast will be available in its entirety. They're working with it. So just kind of hang in there and all is well. Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. So let's see. Here's something for you, Doc, with Chandra. She mixes up a little bit of potassium chloride, some sodium chloride, some salt, baking soda, and some Epsom salts, like a little bit of each, a half teaspoon or so, and she drinks this throughout the day. Can Dr. P talk about the pros and cons of this concoction?
If it agrees with you, then the chemicals are probably pure. You don't want a very large amount of potassium chloride because an overdose can give you low blood pressure or even stop your heart. So the potassium chloride is one you want to not overdo. Athletes, to improve their endurance, can take a tablespoonful of baking soda in a glass of water before they are going to bicycle 20 or 50 miles or something to improve their use of oxygen and sparing their glucose for energy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Here is somebody, Dr. Peet. Jeremy, he said that he's lost his sense of taste and smell, and I've come up with a lot of unique symptoms that people, as well to some other people I know, are experiencing. Does Dr. Peter have any ideas if this COVID could be causing this?
A lot of stress inducers can cause, like I mentioned, the metallothionein protein is increased by stress of any sort, and it, among the things that it can carry out of the body and produce a deficiency of, zinc is one of those, and a deficiency of zinc has been connected with the loss of smell and probably taste.
So when we do extra things like, like a good living source calcium. We have a nice one. It's oyster, not oyster, but pearls, or other things like magnesium, things like that. Do we risk getting things out of balance if we don't do it carefully?
No.
No?
Oyster shell and eggshell calcium carbonate is very safe. If you take too much, just any pure chemical is going to be rejected by your stomach and intestine. Concentrated calcium or potassium chloride tablet, for example, has been known to effectively burn a hole into the stomach or intestine.
Whoa.
Because the potassium chloride relaxes the intestine, and then the concentrated pill sits there disturbing the water balance of the cells. Any concentrated large dose of table salt or vitamin B1, and anything in a high concentration can disturb your stomach and intestine fairly seriously.
Very interesting. Here is someone that lives in a condo. Upstairs they're smoking. I've been having high histamine reaction symptoms, and I feel stress and things like that. Is there anything that I can do possibly to improve the air? I guess, have you ever seen any of these air purifiers, Dr. Pete, that work good?
They're almost always crazily overpriced, but
yeah.
An ultraviolet, a very strong ultraviolet lamp, if you don't look at it, it will produce some ozone and destroy viruses and bacteria in the air, and to a certain extent detoxify some of the organic toxins if it's a fairly small space. And having a fan and a filter combined with a strong ultraviolet bulb, that's the basis for some of these air cleaning things that they often sell for $1,000. Where
you can do it yourself.
You can do it yourself.
You can figure it out. Huh? My 14-month-old granddaughter has eczema. It seems like she scratches herself so much it's hard to see and prevent her from scratching anything that we could look at.
How old was she?
14 months.
If the baby is still nursing, sometimes it's the mother's diet that contains an allergen that gets into the milk and creates a skin problem in the baby. So if she's breastfeeding, the mother should carefully check her diet. And if the baby is eating foods, consider going through eliminating one food at a time for a week or so and see if that clears it up.
Mm-hmm. John wants to know, people are advocating eating grass-fed beef liver for copper and other nutritional requirements. How often would eating, what would make sense, and how often do we eat beef liver?
It depends. If you're over 50, for example, you don't want to overdo the liver because of the high iron content. And for those people, shrimp, squid, mm-hmm. clams, lobster, crabs,
those kind of things.
All the shellfish. Their blood consists of copper protein rather than iron-containing hemoglobin. So they're a reliable source of a high concentration of copper.
But it's interesting. Some of the iron people talk about eating the beef liver because it's so high in copper, which will lower the iron, but you said it's high in iron as well.
So you don't want to, I think something like 2 or 3 ounces a week is about all
An
older person would want.
Yeah, a little bit. Cool. This is from Cecilia. She's in Connecticut. Can you ask Dr. Pete, if he has been studying astrology, is there going to be something monumental happening with our sun and planets that could affect our world drastically come this fall? Can you give any insights?
I don't know of anything that precise in time, but there have been some good physicists who have looked at the solar cycles and the annual changes in heat production coming out of the sun, and for many years, the basic sun science has tended to predict an oncoming ice age with occasional fluctuations into overheating. Sunspot cycles affect the heat output of the sun, but the general drift of predictions has been that the sun is going to cool off for hundreds of years, starting any time in the next several years.
Mm-hmm. That'd be kind of nice here in Texas. We could use a 20-degree drop, Doc. That'd be fine with me. This is from Eric. He's in Finland. Hello, Patrick and Dr. Pete. Last month, Dr. Pete referred to the influence of Professor John Beard on Dr. William Donald Kelly's cancer protocol. This time, please give us insight on how Kelly and Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez were able to know how to balance the automatic nervous system via the diet and supplements so we, the average person, can also achieve this balance on our own as a method to cure disease and maintain our health.
Keeping your blood sugar steady is the basic thing for regulating the balance between parasympathetic and sympathetic. Every day around sunset, but especially if we lie down in the dark, the nervous system shifts strongly to the parasympathetic side. And then at sunrise, for various reasons, it shifts back to the sympathetic or adrenaline-dominated side. And with old age, the tendency is to exaggerate the downturn, the parasympathetic side. And it happens that many tumors grow fastest during the night and are stimulated by the hormones that control the parasympathetic side.
Wow.
And that's one of the things that the Kelly Beard program does. Working on the pancreas, they emphasize the proteolytic enzymes as getting into the bloodstream, not just into the intestine, but it's now confirmed that the proteolytic enzymes secreted into the intestine, a significant amount of that is absorbed directly into the bloodstream. So a well-functioning pancreas is producing an increase of proteolytic enzymes in the bloodstream that, according to their approach, protects against the incipient cancer, especially in the reproductive system. That was Beard's approach that Kelly based his thinking on. But the fact that the parasympathetic system increases cell division and produces conditions that exacerbate inflammation, for example, any pain syndrome usually is most intense around between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. And mortality is generally greatest in the early morning hours because of that shift towards excessive parasympathetic activity. Keeping your pancreas under control so it doesn't produce too much insulin is a very important part of avoiding that age-related nocturnal inflammation.
Interesting. So, but you've not been shy about your use of and talking about sugar with orange juice and even beet sugar and things. So, what is not happening in the body where if people do that, their blood sugar goes, you know, imbalanced, or they have a fasting blood sugar that's 130 or 40 or something? Is that a pancreas issue?
Partly, but it's generally that something is causing a block to the oxidation of the glucose, and too much fat in the diet, especially polyunsaturated fat.
The PUFAs.
The fats compete with the sugar, and stress increases the release of fat in your bloodstream. And that happens at night. Always the falling blood glucose calls out from storage the free fatty acids, and those that's one of the reasons darkness and long nights of winter, why aging happens, almost all human aging happens during the night, and when the nights are long in the winter, the aging process has more hours every day to act.
Wow.
And the lowering of the blood sugar and increase of free fatty acids during the night is part of what drives that degenerative stress. And so if you wake up after 4 hours of sleep, for example, and renew your muscle and liver glycogen stores and brain glycogen with a glass of milk and orange juice, for example, that will interrupt the stress and let you get back to some restorative sleep.
Well, so that could be two go-to things for people to take at night if they wake up or before bed: milk and or orange juice.
There have been studies in which just a glass of warm or room temperature milk at bedtime interrupts some of the most important stress hormones that rise at night.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, this is anecdotal, and not that what happens to me just means anything to you out there, but Dr. Pete, I've been drinking lots of orange juice since hanging, with talking to you. I mean, really fresh, the good stuff. And my little blood sugar, boy, it's dead on 80 when I wake up, and if I take it, the fasting blood sugar. So where's all that sugar going? Where's it all going? I mean, there's a lot of sugar in orange juice, right?
And it happens that orange juice has several things that reduce the work of the pancreas. The high potassium concentration, for example, in orange juice takes care of the insulin problem. Your pancreas doesn't have to make much insulin at all if you're drinking orange juice, because the potassium handles it instead of needing insulin.
Wow.
And then there are all of these flavonoids, the yellow pigments, that block stress reactions and work like oxygen in the tissues. One of the functions of insulin is to keep your fatty acids in place in your tissues so they don't block your ability to oxidize glucose. And these flavonoids have exactly that function. They keep the cell able to keep oxidizing glucose.
Interesting. And so what causes the free fatty acids from not doing their thing in the middle of the night? What causes that? What would we eat that would turn those guys off or do? Stress, obviously, would be one, I guess.
Calcium is the other. Salt, to a certain extent. You don't want to take a spoonful of salt. That would hurt your stomach. But just some salty things like pork rinds or salty tortilla chips or something at bedtime.
Not good.
And a glass or two of milk. Both calcium and sodium help to activate the oxidative, proper oxidative energy production in the cells, which normally they're impeded during the night by the free fatty acids. Combination of sodium and calcium will lower the stress hormones, especially parathyroid hormones.
Lower, okay.
And those parathyroid hormone, every night it rises and blocks your mitochondrial oxidative processes. So the milk is, if you have enough vitamin D in your system, the calcium from the milk is, in effect, activating your mitochondria, restoring their ability to keep running, even in the presence of some fatty acids.
So let me see if I understand. So the salt is good, the salt before bed.
A little bit.
And then if you get a good source of calcium, that could also help everybody be happy all night before bed.
Yeah, those work together to hold down the stress hormones and let your mitochondria function.
Yeah, yeah.
Darkness, in all animals that have been studied, the longer the darkness, the more the mitochondria deteriorate. That's a combination of many things, but especially the rising fatty acids and parathyroid hormone.
If people tend to sleep more during the winter just because it's dark, it's actually, they're not getting a lot of benefit out of that, are they?
Well, no? being awake during a long winter night, it's worse than being asleep.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, if you're going to have several hours of good, restful, deep sleep, that minimizes the damage to the mitochondria.
I see.
If you have to work during the night, that you don't get the protective effect of deep sleep. So it's still going to cause damage to the mitochondria to be in the dark, but it's better to pass the darkness in sleep.
Dr. Ray Peet is with us, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. We got started a little bit late. Can you hang around for a few minutes, Dr. Peet?
Okay.
You okay? Good. This is Kane in Bellevue, Washington. Can you please ask Dr. Peet to help me understand why high-dose PUFA fish oil seems to help so many thrive and going way back, from athletes to brain injury, fish oil has helped and is helping many perform at high levels, recover from severe brain injury. So I don't understand his negative approach to fish oils.
Oh, my negative approach, it would take a week or so to give the sources explaining it. But the short version is that when you ingest a highly polyunsaturated oil, it's like the problem with taking in a large amount of synthetic ascorbic acid. Any reducing and oxidizing catalysts that are present are going to cause an explosive degrading oxidation of these highly oxidizable molecules. Studies have found that by the time fish oil gets into your bloodstream, it's already highly oxidized. And it's these oxidized free radical breakdown products of the fish oil that suppress the white blood cells and knock down your immune reactions. So for the first 6 months, usually, you get these anti-inflammatory effects that seem very beneficial. But you've probably heard of the radon baths causing immediate relief from arthritis. And they used to give X-ray treatments, actually, to a sore knee joint. And you'd get immediate knockdown of the inflammation in an arthritic joint from the ionizing radiation. But the anti-inflammatory effects of a big dose of highly oxidizable fish oil is working by the same mechanism, knocking out the inflammatory white blood cells. But the effect 6 months later, the process starts showing up the harmful effects. The radiation damage continues for 20 or 30 or 40 years later. And there haven't been such studies with the polyunsaturated oil overdoses, but the same kind of damage occurs, and so you would expect the long-range damage. What they see is that immune deficiency begins setting in after about 6 months of continuous supplementation of things such as fish oil. And part of the argument in relation to the brain is that the brain contains a lot of these highly polyunsaturated fats. But when you look at either humans over a period of several decades or in animal studies during a few years of an animal's development, when a cow or a person or a dog or rat is newborn, the brain has been highly protected against fatty acid absorption. The brain makes its own polyunsaturated fats as needed from sugar. The brain first produces the saturated fatty acids and then creates an omega minus 9 like oleic acid, and then that can be further desaturated to produce the highly unsaturated omega 9 series, which are used in the brain. So those are the only PUFAs that the newborn brain contains. They're defined as deficient in essential fatty acids, but really that's the state in which the brain has its greatest metabolic energy and its greatest capacity to learn. With aging, the brain gradually accumulates more and more polyunsaturated fats from the environment. And as it does that, its metabolic rate slows down exactly in proportion with its ability to learn.
Interesting. What's the go-to things that we can do other than stop taking any PUFAs, polyunsaturated fatty acids, to get them out? Are there things we can do supplementally or dietarily to get these guys out?
That's one of the benefits of adjusting your carbohydrate intake very carefully so that you get as much as 100% of your energy supply from carbohydrates, so that you don't draw down free fatty acids. And that allows you to, when you do take in some environmental PUFA, you can oxidize that small amount safely. So if you keep just your general fat intake as low as possible, maybe 15%, if possible, of your diet as fats, getting most of the rest of your energy from carbohydrates, not too much protein, and as little fat as you can manage while still keeping a palatable, pleasant diet.
But that would be just for somebody who has a PUFA overload. If you don't have many PUFAs, you could do more fat and things like that, right?
A skinny person.
Like me, I just eat all the butter I can, and I don't go anywhere. It's like...
Butter. Butter is fine if your oxidative system handles it, so you don't store it.
Butter, cheese, and all. Here's a good one for you. My husband's basal temperature is quite low, 96.5, and never gets to normal throughout the day, and his heart rate is 57. He's 68. He wants to try one of the thyroid supplements, hoping to boost his thyroid. Do you think this would work, or should he get on something like Armour Thyroid or something like that?
There are dozens of so-called natural thyroid products on the market, but some of them don't work at all. And so if you have someone to write a prescription for armor, I think that's the best one to start with.
So 96.5, that would be an indication, generally, of low thyroid?
Yeah, that's 2 degrees Fahrenheit below normal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's enough to slow your all of your biological processes.
Mm-hmm. We have some people that are listening and watching on YouTube this morning. Let's get to them. Dr. Pete, is it possible that using a near-infrared sauna every night can be counterproductive for joint issues like arthritis or fibrosis? And what are your three diet choices for joints? So near-infrared, which are those lamps, right? The heat lamps?
That's just closer to red light is what the near means.
Yeah, close.
But the body is always emitting infrared radiation, near infrared and far infrared. So we're broadcasting in the range that TV stations and cell phones use. Some of our 70% of our biological energy goes out as radiation, much of it in the roughly infrared spectrum. And if you surround yourself with an insulator and reflector, you quickly overheat, because we count on losing two-thirds of our energy into the environment as radiation.
Wow.
And the problem with unnatural or environmental heat added to the system, like a hot bath, if you don't have your orange juice or milk before and during a prolonged hot bath, you might faint from the consuming your glycogen stores too fast, because it does rev up your whole metabolic system, and you need to feed it at a higher rate.
Hmm.
So that's the only risk of something like near infrared,
far infrared. So yeah, it'd be good for even far infrared that I like to do, to juice up with some orange juice before.
That's very protective.
Oh, cool. And the great thing about orange juice, Dr. Peace, is it tastes so good. I mean, shoo, man, I tell you.
The body really knows.
It really knows it, right? That's right. Yeah. You drink it and you go, boy, this is really tastes good. Should the spine, this is from M. Jam on YouTube, should the spine ever be experiencing any kind of chronic pain, could all of this pain be just inflammation?
You should never experience prolonged pain.
Hmm.
Where there's pain, there's inflammation. And if it proceeds too long, the inflammation will tend to produce fibrosis or excess collagen deposition eventually atrophy of the good tissues.
Hmm.
So stopping the pain is really not just symptom relief, but it's actually changing your biology. For example, aspirin and the angiotensin receptor blockers are working not just against the pain or immediate inflammation and hypertension or whatever, but they're stopping the problem, actually reversing or blocking the preceding degenerative processes.
Here's one from X Talex. That's about the only name I got there. Can you please ask your Dr. Pete, what would be the best approach to deal with an 8-year-old boy with muscular dystrophy? Is it safe to give him progesterone?
Too much progesterone in a boy around puberty is able to prevent the testosterone production that will start around the age of 9 or 10. The testosterone starts rising slowly, and so you don't want to be exaggerated in the use, but it does help to protect an atrophy process such as dystrophy of the muscles.
Do women going through perimenopause in that era tend to need a little testosterone hit?
No.
No.
If they are watching their thyroid and protecting their liver, the main thing is to not let estrogen production get out of control, because aging, menopause, all of the stressful changes tend to activate the process of estrogen inside cells, not in the ovaries, but inside every cell of the body. Stress turns on the local production of estrogen, which isn't going to get measured in your bloodstream, but if you took out a piece of tissue from a stressed person over the age of 55 or so, you're going to find a higher amount of internal estrogen, and the aromatase enzyme that produces it. And if your cholesterol blood level doesn't increase steadily with age, your ability to produce your own progesterone and testosterone is going to be limited in proportion to the lack of available cholesterol.
Here's an interesting one from Carol. What would could help if I or one of my dogs were bit by a copperhead? I killed 11, last month on my yard. 11, oh my goodness. She lives out in the country. Any ideas what could help if she or her dog got bit by one of these guys?
There have been several studies in which an electrical shocking device applied to the bite area will cause some kind of reaction that detoxifies the poison at the site. Otherwise, I would I don't know what the specific treatment is, but veterinarians would probably have an anti-serum to it.
And what about people? I mean, so what is this? Is there something she could explore, some kind of shocking device? Do you have any other further...
I don't know the sources that make them, but you can find quite a bit of information on the Internet about electroshock and snake bite.
So just Google electroshock and snake bites, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, Dr. Pete, thanks for being here. Oh, one last thing. Oh, this is a good one, too. I'm glad I caught it. From JGL, that'll be a good way to close. What does Dr. Pete think? Does he think there's any negative effects on our body from wearing a face mask, even if for just a little while? See, they get the politically incorrect questions right at the end. Yeah. So what do you think? I mean, they're making some people wear these things all day, right, at work.
There are lots of confirmed damages that can happen. You were talking about exhaling exosomes.
Yes, sir.
Those become concentrated. Even if they're your own exosomes, you're going to concentrate them and rebreathe them. Any environmental stuff, instead of escaping normally with each breath, they're going to the extent that the mask does any filtering at all, it's going to also concentrate the debris inside the mask so that every breath is a little more concentrated in the stuff that failed to be filtered out by the mask, but you breathe it in, and then there's a certain sheltering effect that keeps it from going away.
Final question just popped in, and it's a good one. Is Dr. Pete available for phone consultations?
No.
You don't do that any longer?
No.
You gave that one up, huh?
Too many callers, not enough time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Dr. Pete, get any painting done these days?
Yep. Got out to stand in the sunlight when it was too hot to lie down in the sun. I stood up and dabbled on some paintings.
Yeah. What kind of things do you do? Landscapes? You do landscapes?
Yeah.
You do landscapes. Yep. Yeah. Well, it's his website is raypete.com, right? Raypete.com?
Mm-hmm.
And we have Ray Pete's newsletter. That is plural, Ray Pete's newsletter at gmail.com if you'd like to join that. And it's an honor to have you here. Thanks for everything. And we'll see you in about a month or so, sir.
Okay, very good.
Thank you. Take care of yourself.
Bye.
Okay, bye. Dr. Ray Pete, OneRadioNetwork.com. Boy, he's fun, huh? It's amazing that he can remember all this stuff and then connect the dots with, whoa, and this. It's really cool. Ray Pete, his website. Got a lot of good stuff on his website. RayPete.com. Well, we had quite a day, huh? Sorry, the internet just got a little wonky there just for a minute. I guess about 45 minutes ago. But they fixed it up pretty quick, so. But the whole podcast will be here. I'm not sure how the video is. I think it cramped our video style for a moment. But, you know, what are you going to do? We're very blessed with our internet. We love you, internet people. We love you. So what do we have tomorrow? Let's see. Oh boy, we got a good show tomorrow. Tom Luongo is going to be here. Tom Luongo has got a really interesting whole story about gold. Let's see what gold's doing today. Man, it's been booming. Whoa. Whoa, double whoa. Wow. $40. It's up $40 today. Almost $2,000. Silver's up 3.5%, 27. The dollar, I guess, is not happy. So we're going to talk about it. Gold's on a tear, or so they say, tomorrow. And then also Joseph Bender. He's really cool. He's in Austin, and we'll talk about detoxification with Joseph Bender. So that's our story for tomorrow. I love you all very much. You're doing the best you can, no matter what anybody says. Drink your orange juice. Drink your milk. And we'll see you tomorrow, okay? I love you. May the blessings be.
We are listener-supported, One Radio Network.